Get ready for Malice, a twisted new drama starring Jack Whitehall, David Duchovny, and Carice Van Houten. Jack Whitehall plays Adam, a charming man who infiltrates the wealthy Tanner family with a hidden motive to destroy them. This edge-of-your-seat revenge thriller unravels a deliciously dark mystery in a world full of wealth, secrets, and betrayal. Malice will constantly keep you on your toes. Why is Adam after the Tanner family? What lengths will he go to? One thing's for sure, the past never stays buried, so keep your enemies close. Watch all episodes of Malice on November 14th, only on Prime Video.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Well, hello and welcome. This is your host, Ken D. Foster. Welcome to our show today. You know, we have a very important show today on Heal It. This planet needs some healing, wouldn't you say? You know, we're going to be talking about our food supply today. We're going to be talking about what we put in our bodies in terms of food, nutrition, you know, why we put it in our bodies. Did you know that most people are killing themselves with what they eat? Did you know that? Well, it's true. You know, we've done a lot of shows with a lot of MDs on this show. You know, the two killers that we see are stress and the foods that we're putting in our bodies. So today, I really wanted to dedicate a show for us to really start to become really aware of what to put in our bodies that will fuel us and create energy and vitality and take your body, take your mind. Your mind should be like a brain fog or a wet match, right? When you try to light it, you know, there's nothing there, right? It should be like a spark. You light it and bam, it's on fire, and you tap into the creative juices that you have and take your businesses, take your lives, take your family lives, your relationships to new levels because you feel so good and you wake up that way all the time. Well, food has a big impact on what we put into our bodies, put into our minds. Listen, today I have my co-host with me, Dr. James Lee. James, welcome. So good to have you today.
It's always good to be here, Ken. I'm looking forward to another good show. This is a very interesting topic, and I can't wait to see where this goes.
Well, I can't wait to see where it goes either. I think this is going to be an amazing show. And I believe that we're going to be able to really dive deep into some of the areas that we really need to discuss. So we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back from the break, we're going to have our very special guest on the show. So we'll be right back. Well, welcome back, everybody. This is your host, Ken D. Foster. And as I mentioned, I have a very special guest for us today. His name is Dr. John Sanbonmatsu. Dr. John, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me. Great to meet you, Ken and James.
Great to have you.
It's great to have you. We really feel honored to have you. And for those of you that don't know Dr. John, he grew up in the South Shore of Massachusetts. He received his BA from Hampshire College and his PhD from the History of Consciousness Department at the University of California at Santa Cruz. He's currently professor of philosophy at Worcester Polytech Institute, where he teaches ethics, existentialism, philosophy of technology, critical theory, animal studies, and other subjects. He is the author of the book, The Omnivore's Deception, and we're going to talk all about that today. So welcome to the show. It's just great to have you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Listen, what inspired you to write this book, The Omnivore's Deception?
Well, I'll tell you, you know, when I was in college, I came across a book in a bookstore called Animal Liberation by Peter Singer. This was a bestseller, 1975, when it came out. And Singer's a philosopher, was at Princeton, and he argued that we ought to take the suffering of other animals into account in our moral deliberation, particularly in the food industry, right? Because we all know, I think, many people have at least some sense that we'll keep animals in the food business for the fall. So that put me on a path of vegetarianism and then veganism. So next year I'll be in a vegan for 40 years. And in that time, you know, since then, as I got with my graduate work and began teaching and so on, I've been spending a lot of time thinking about our relations with other beings on this earth. And the more I've delved into it, the more I've looked at it, the bigger the problem becomes in a certain sense. And the reason I wrote this book, and by the way, it took me 12 to 15 years to write this book. So it took longer than I thought. I thought I'd be able to rip it out off in a few months, like that. The reason I decided I needed to write this book is I don't think people have the slightest idea, actually, of the scale of the mass violence that we're inflicting on the beings of the earth, the ecological consequences of it, or how we've, in a sense, organized our entire existential identity as human beings around this violence. So in your introduction, you mentioned what we put into our bodies, that we consume. And I think that if you begin looking at that issue, then you end up having to take a look at these much broader structures of being life, economics, culture, religion, just the way we've organized ourselves around oppressing other beings in what I and others call speciesism or human supremacism. So it's a big topic, but I think it's the most important topic of our day.
Well, I think it is too, and I live maybe a mile away from a cattle ranch, and you know, I was riding my bike past it the other day, and you know, and all the cows are sitting there. They all look depressed. They're all in pens. They're standing on their own feces. They're all tagged. They're cows laying down in their own feces, and this is, you know, and then of course, you know, we take them to market, and I don't know if anybody in this show, and I'm gonna put it out there. When I was young, I went to a blood meal factory. A friend of mine I was working for asked me to deliver something over to this factory. And I went downtown L.A. And if you've never been to a blood meal factory, you know, the smell, the stench from the cow's blood goes out miles and miles and miles. And this is what we're putting into our bodies. This is a dysfunctional system that people actually believe. Most people don't even know the system. That's the problem. And you know, we watch commercials. We watch people that say that eating this red meat is great, and you know, you should have it, and this is, you know, you need the protein from the red meat, and you know, maybe some people do, but I know this: you can have as much protein in a head of broccoli as you do in a steak. So you know, there's no excuse for this, other than we've been tricked, we've been lied to, we've been told things that are not true. And, you know, it started way back when with the four food groups, that were put out. And the four food groups, if that's what you're eating, I can guarantee what you look like, okay? You're big, you're obese, you don't have much energy, and you think that this is, you know, you have a mindset that says, as I age, I just get bigger and thicker, and I get old, and I have all these diseases in my body, and that's just a natural part of aging. Whoever told you that lied to you. That's not the natural way. That's my thought. I'm sorry I went on that, but you know, this is what we're talking about.
and from my perspective as a physician, the argument of veganism versus omnivore, being of omnivore, was always one of purely just diet and health. John's talking about it from other perspectives, bigger perspectives, and I was just curious, what was the first direction outside of a diet that you pursued? What was it that you studied that got you on this path?
Thanks for that. I want to maybe begin by responding to what you were saying, Ken, about the cows that you're seeing. You know, you clearly are a person of empathy. And it's because of that that you were able to put yourself in the position of the cows and intuit that they're depressed. Now, a lot of people would say, well, that's anthropocentrism. You're projecting a human emotion onto cows. In fact, humans have only been on the earth, well, hominids, for 2 million years and modern humans for 200 to 300,000 years. So we're actually pretty recent arrivals here. And there would be, of course, millions of other species with complex emotions long before we got here. So we did not invent empathy, right? We didn't invent depression and things like those. That was already here on the earth. So when we look at other beings and if we open our hearts to them and have empathy, we can see that they are complex beings with subjectivity, all of which is confirmed by science, by the way. And we can see that they suffer in a variety of ways. So I think that you're someone who grew up with cats and dogs in the household, and you know they were integrated into our family structure in a way. We knew that they were individuals with thoughts and feelings, even though they were very different from us, capable of love and affection and so on. So, you know, for myself, the learning about the way animals are treated, right, in animal agriculture and fishing and science and so forth. First of all, it was shocking, honestly, to learn what's done. People really have no idea what's going on. I mean, we're killing, just in the food system alone, we're killing about 80 billion land animals, mostly birds and mammals, every year, and up to 2.7 trillion marine animals every year. I mean, we're just wiping out all the life in the oceans. And So I think that for me, the starting point, and for many people who become vegan or animal advocates, is simply using empathy as a mode of knowledge, as a way of understanding the other, and being able to understand their experiences, and then therefore the structures that impinge on that. Okay, so if you want to understand what's happening to animals today, you have to understand capitalism. You have to understand the way the capitalist system reduces nature and animals to mere raw material for the production of profit. That's simply the fact, right? Because you turn on the TV or look at the internet, we're bombarded with ads, as you know, to reinforce this addictive behavior to eggs, meat, eggs, dairy, fish, and so on, right? So even though the science has established that vegans actually live longer than, quote, omnivores, that vegans have a lower rates of cancer, heart disease, stroke, type 2 diabetes, and so forth. There are just all of these reasons why it's good for us, right, not to commit this oppression. So my work really is about looking at peeling away the layers of myth and self-deception that keep us stuck. And one thing I like to think about is, if, like, structures of power, it's not one and done. You just set up this thing of, you know, human domination over all the other beings, and then it just runs. No, it has to be continually reinforced. So when you're a kid, you might get a little children's book when you're like a year old that is about farm animals. You ever seen these books, you know, cows moo and chickens cluck and so forth, as though chickens, cows, goats, sheep, and so forth are part of the Linnaean system of biological classification, farmed animals is a biological category. So we're trained from birth to see this as a natural order, and it isn't. This is a cultural system, and we could change it. The way we could we invented television. That's a cultural production. Well, so is animal agriculture. There's nothing natural about dominating and killing other animals. We can choose differently. And to be honest, we have to if we want to live on a survivable planet, because this system is killing, literally killing the living Earth.
Yeah. People would argue, we've been eating fish and cow and lamb and pork, for eons. Okay. Well, isn't this just normal? Isn't this, we go back to the cavemen and, they were eating animals. We can, what do you say to that?
Yeah, sure. I mean, that's the first kind of line of defense around the system, is that it's natural. Okay. Well, I'll answer your question, but let me just point out, to your listeners and viewers that, there's nothing natural about taking beings from nature, sexually reproducing them, genetically modifying them, keeping them in intensive confinement, shooting them in the head with a captive bolt gun. At what point is this natural behavior? Okay. But the fact is that it's all we can say is that humans are biological omnivores. What does that mean? It means that we can metabolize mostly anything, flesh as well as plant matter. But we can also eat one another, and cannibalism or anthropophagy has been part of human culture for thousands of years. But if I go and kill my neighbor and eat my neighbor, and the police say, "Hey, what's up with that?" And I say, "Well, it's natural because I have, I can metabolize flesh. That's not going to hold up in court, and it won't hold up in court." Similarly, for me to kill some animal in nature and say, "Well, it's just natural." It isn't. It's a cultural practice. It's a cultural practice. Otherwise, what are we going to say? Leonardo da Vinci, who was an ethical vegetarian, was acting unnaturally by not eating animals. Whereas Joseph Stalin, who killed millions of people and was a meat eater, was acting naturally. It's just ludicrous. But the other thing I want to say is, even if it was natural, it wouldn't make it right. Okay. Cancer is natural. Viruses are natural. Anthrax is natural. It doesn't mean that those are good, right? Good and bad are things we ascribe as values to natural objects, natural processes. But it's up to us to decide. Like, aggression is probably natural in humans, as in many species, but that doesn't mean that we should cultivate aggression. We just, what I'm saying? So that argument is really fallacious.
Well, one of the things that I've learned is that, carnivores, let's say a lion, they have a very short digestion tract. I think it's like 10 feet. We as humans, and other herbivores have very long digestive tracts. Like, the gorillas, the giraffes, us, very long. So it's when we kind of look at that, what's natural to a carnivore, because they can digest that, meat very quickly. It takes us forever because it's not natural in my world. I don't know if you've seen that or heard that, but that's what I've learned over the years.
Well, I think the scientific consensus is that humans are biologically omnivores rather than herbivores.
But also
the science, the nutritional studies show that, as I said, and as you both know, that humans do better on a plant-based diet than one that includes animal products. And even you look at chimpanzees, who we're 99% genetically identical with. They eat, they're omnivores, but they only eat insects and other animals. Well, let's just keep it with other animals, leave insects aside. If that's meat, quote unquote, makes up 3% of their diet. And if you look historically, even in pre-modern times, prehistory, humans ate meat as a small part of their diet. Even today, I don't have the statistics at my fingertips, but the vast majority of our calories, caloric intake, is from plant matter. Even today, with the meat economy surging, again, whether it's natural or not is not the issue. The question is whether it's right and whether it's healthy and whether it's ecologically sustainable. And it isn't right. It isn't healthy for us, and it isn't ecologically sustainable. And it's also, by the way, it's also creating disease vectors. This whole system, right? H5N1, the bird flu virus. We're on the brink, possibly, of a catastrophic pandemic that will be due to animal agriculture.
Well, listen, I got to take a break. When we come back, I want to talk to you a little bit about the new science of animal minds and the emotions that are being revealed to us about animals. I think that'd be a fascinating topic because I think a lot of people don't know what that is. So we're going to take a quick break and then we will be right back.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Get ready for Malice, a twisted new drama starring Jack Whitehall, David Duchovny, and Carice Van Houten. Jack Whitehall plays Adam, a charming man who infiltrates the wealthy Tanner family with a hidden motive to destroy them. This edge-of-your-seat revenge thriller unravels a deliciously dark mystery in a world full of wealth, secrets, and betrayal. Malice will constantly keep you on your toes. Why is Adam after the Tanner family? What lengths will he go to? One thing's for sure, the past never stays buried, so keep your enemies close. Watch all episodes of Malice on November 14th, only on Prime Video.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Well, welcome back, everybody. This is your host, Kim D. Foster. I'm talking to Dr. John Sanbonmatsu. I probably butchered that, John.
Sanbonmatsu.
Sanbonmatsu. Very good. And, we're talking about his new book, actually. We're going to be putting that on the screen in just a minute. It's called The Omnivore's Deception. And talking about the deception, what's the new science around animals right now?
Well, it's really fascinating. We're in this this moment historically that's unprecedented. I mean, humans have lived alongside other animals for many thousands of years, actually from the beginning, right? I mean, if you look at the ancient cave drawings, what are they of? They're not of lunch. They're not of furniture. They're of other animals. So we've always been very close spiritually to other animals. But what happened is with the Enlightenment and the scientific revolution, there was a kind of conception that developed of animals as instinctual machines. This was a view particularly developed by René Descartes in the 17th century. And what we are finding now in the wake of Charles Darwin and Darwin's theory of evolution in the late 19th century is that other animals are highly intelligent. They have complex emotions. And we see this field developing of what we call cognitive ethology, or the comparative study of animal minds. And so there's just a ton of research that's been done already and still being done on the cognition and experiences and capacities of other beings. And one of the findings that we have now is that this notion that we have that humans are kind of at the apex of creation, and then you go down the scale, and then there are apes, and then there are other mammals, and then there are birds, and then there are reptiles, and then you get down to protozoa or something. It's completely not true. Sophisticated cognition is distributed throughout the animal realm. I mean, even insects, most people dismiss insects as just objects without anything going on there. They actually exhibit many different kinds of learning, intelligence, memory. They have emotions. They even have personalities within their species, by which I mean to say each insect has its own temperament, all of which has been demonstrated.
Wow.
So, you know, if you begin to read about this stuff, and I go into it in my book and some of the later chapters, it's not just fascinating. It makes it possible for us to go out into the world with a sense of wonder and enchantment that we've lost, right? Science has stripped us of, in a certain sense, our capacity for wonder. Now, I know some scientists would disagree with that, and rightly so. But I think that certainly in terms of other animals, right, because we have such prejudices against them, it's quite important that we, mm-hmm. you know, learn about what science has to teach us about this question of animal minds and animal subjectivity.
What's fascinating. I think that, you know, what's lacking, of course, you know, if people want to stop digging their grave with their own mouths, is education. And really, this is what we're talking about here. You know, your book, I didn't want to put your book, we had it on the screen for a minute, but I wanted to let my audience know where we can purchase the Omnivore's Deception. The Omnivore's Deception. Where can we get the book?
The Omnivore's Deception is available at a very small, obscure place called Amazon.com. You can also get it through my publisher, New York University Press, and other booksellers. But certainly Amazon is the main place people can order it from.
Yeah. Okay. So the Omnivore's Deception, and you can get that on Amazon. And I'm saying that for my listening audience, because I know we got a million people watching us every month just on our AM FM across the country today. So you guys are really important to us. And this is a really important book that I want to recommend. I want you to go out and go get it today. It would be highly, what do I want to say? It's important for you to do this if you want to be part of the solution instead of part of the problem. And I know my audience likes to be part of the solution, so that's what we're talking about here. Yeah. Go ahead.
Oh, I just wanted to say, like, in terms of percentage of population that is vegan, we're talking about 1-3%, and I think education is going to be important to bring those numbers up, because it takes typically about 10-14% of the population to form a tipping point in terms of acceptability, in terms of what's considered normal. It's well known that the vegan diet is the most healthy for us. We live longer, we are healthier, we feel better, and we have more healthy years while on a vegan diet. But it's not a popular one, because because so few are adhering to that. And when you have when you don't have that tribe, when you don't have that community, when you can't go out to dinner with just any restaurant, it limits your options, and it limits your acceptability. So I think your book is instrumental in getting those numbers up. We need to increase it from 1-3% to about 10% before it really gains traction. So good luck to you there. I will support you on that.
Thanks so much, both of you, on that.
Let me ask you this. You know, all right, we've been brainwashed, you know, and this show is about telling the truth. We're trying to tell you that we are telling you the truth here. If you want to feel more vibrant, more alive, healthier, less disease, live a longer life, then hey, you know, go get John's book. But not only get the book, read the book, educate yourself, from my point of view. And then make the shift from mediocrity to excellence. Mediocrity. Anybody can live a mediocre life, okay? And if you do, you know, you're going to be subject to all the mediocrity in the world, okay? That happens health-wise. But if you say, I'm going to take my life to the next level, and I'm going to learn how to be, you know, maybe it's a step for you. Maybe you go from, you know, eating red meat to just cutting out red meat. That's all. Just cut out the red meat and then start educating yourself. and start to become maybe, you eat more fish for a while or chicken, and then you can just cut those out. It can be stepped, but what we're talking about, yeah, by the way, it's easier just to go, I'm done with this, right? When you educate yourself, you will be done with eating the red meats. You just will, because there's a lot of science out there. You know, in spite of the bodybuilders or the ones that are promoting a carnivore's diet, you know, might want to look and see, use AI to ask how long those folks generally live. Okay, it's not long. Not if you want to live, to be in your 80s, 90s, or 100s. That's what we're talking about here. John, wait.
It's not only length of time. It's the quality of life. It's the health.
Well, yeah. On that note, I want to say when Socrates, the ancient Greek philosopher, was put on trial in ancient Athens, basically for the crime of being a philosopher, I just say asking annoying questions of his fellow Athenians. When he was put on trial, he said to the Athenians, you know, you care more about wealth and power and in a certain sense self-interest than you do about the goodness of your own souls. Okay. And that line, among other lines in Plato's Apology, which is basically kind of a trial transcript of what happens at Socrates' trial, has resonated through the ages and certainly one that I've taken to heart. Now, Socrates, of course, was asked to drink poison hemlock. So the trial turned against him and he was the first person killed for asking philosophical questions. Well, I mentioned Socrates because my book does mention, you know, in passing the health benefits of us giving up these practices. But as a fellow named Jesus asked, you know, what profits a man if he should win the world but lose his soul? It's the same kind of idea that even if it was true that we are less healthy on a vegan diet, even if that was true, which it isn't true, we would still be morally obligated to stop the practices that we're engaged in against all of our fellow creatures, even if it was true that veganism was somehow not as good a diet, because there are higher goods than my own health, my own self-interest. Justice and truth and courage. You in your show, I like the fact that you begin the show with the title sequence talks about truth and courage. Well, truth and courage matter more than my own longevity. Okay, people have sacrificed their lives and their interests for thousands of years for the right thing. Martin Luther King Jr., Gandhi. And so on and so forth. Many, many, many others. Sojourner Truth. The sacrifices would be worth it, even if we didn't ourselves stand to benefit. But of course, happily, there's a coincidence of our own interests and the interests of justice, because we, as we've been talking about here.
The station that makes you feel good.
Get ready for Malice, a twisted new drama starring Jack Whitehall, David Duchovny, and Carice Van Houten. Jack Whitehall plays Adam, a charming Manny infiltrates the wealthy Tanner family with a hidden motive to destroy them. This edge-of-your-seat revenge thriller unravels a deliciously dark mystery in a world full of wealth, secrets, and betrayal. Malice will constantly keep you on your toes. Why is Adam after the Tanner family? What lengths will he go to? One thing's for sure, the past never stays buried, so keep your enemies close. Watch all episodes of Malice on November 14th, only on Prime Video.
Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
It's simple. But you know, I've been working with Dr. Irvin Laszlo for the last 2 years. Dr. Laszlo has been nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize twice. He's written over 106 books. He's worked with the United Nations. You know, and his message is really simple. It's a message that we have to get rid of the separation thinking, you know, me versus you, I'm red, you're green, you're blue, you know, the different races. We have to start seeing ourselves as one species, one planet, one source that we all come from. And when we can start seeing each other as one, we start to understand that what I do and how I eat impacts you, and how, you know, it impacts us. You know, if I'm wasteful and, you know, and going down this, you know, the carnivore system, if that's my mindset, you know, that's impacting us. That's impacting the planet. You know, we just, you know, Dr. John gave us the statistics of how many animals we're eating. Okay. You know, and I know that, you know, the sharks, you know, we eat 50 million sharks a year, something like that. And they only eat, you know, 10 of us. So there's something off here. Okay. Just saying. Okay.
Yeah. It's interesting you should mention sharks. That's something I ask in the classroom of my students. They say, well, how many humans are eaten by sharks every year? And surprisingly, they know that between 10 and 20, maybe worldwide every year. Right. And then I ask how many sharks are killed by humans, not necessarily eaten, but killed. And they guess, oh, you know, maybe 1,000, maybe 5,000. And actually, it's up to 100 million scientists.
100 million now.
100 million. And we're just wiping them. And you know, Jaws is one of my favorite movies. Okay. So, but it's very much an anti-shark movie, unfortunately. Peter Benchley, the author of the book, spent years in conservation. Afterwards, he felt very bad about the fact that Jaws, we are not so well equipped as mammals to read fish emotions. You know, they just seem to be these, you know, they just gape and they just seem to have nothing going on. Not true. Not true. Fish are intelligent. They have memories. They experience trauma. They clearly have some kind of emotional life. And remember, that shouldn't surprise us because fish have been on the earth, you know, for many, 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 you know, hundreds of millions of years before humans got here. And same with insects, by the way, you know, who we write off. Invertebrates we think of as stupid. Well, mollusks now turn out to be among the most intelligent animals on the earth. I'm sure you're aware of octopuses. Octopuses are mollusks. You know, they don't have a spinal cord, but they outperform primates, you know, at some tests. So we need a new way of looking at nature, a new way of looking at
it. Well, you know, it's interesting because, you know, that now you can go buy grasshopper and you know, different types of insects to eat, and people are promoting that to get your protein, and next thing we'll be eating the bees, and you know, it's kind of never ending, you know. And you know, I think the what Moses, Jesus, and the Buddhists, the Tibetans, the Hindus, they all have one philosophy they all agree on, is thou shalt not kill. That's it. That's the one thing that they all say in their philosophies. Don't kill.
Yeah, but as you know, all of the above have done a lot of killing, some more than others. And this is, of course, the problem with the human condition, is that there's no... This is why we find it very hard to get along with each other, because, well, of course, you're right that we are all one and we should see ourselves as all one. But there are also these pesky ideologies circulating and inequalities and forms of power and authority and that are violent and ruthless. And you know what I mean? And so
well they do. Some of these philosophies came out of very dark ages, but yeah, I've done a lot of study of religions. When you get to the essence of the teachings of the ones that came in, they're all pretty much the same. They're about peace. They're about love. They're about connection. They're about treating one another, you know, like you'd like to be treated. And, you know, there really is a philosophy of oneness. That at the heart. Now, I'm not saying that the dogmas, you know, it's like you take the dogmas that have come out of these teachers. You know, most of the time these teachers didn't. In fact, none of them that I've ever studied, whether it be Allah or Buddha or Krishna or Jesus, you know, they came from a message of peace, love, courage, connection. It was manipulated by man for their own power, their own use, and their own ways of controlling populations. This has been my experience.
Mm-hmm. Yes, well, boy, religion, we could get into
that. We probably don't want to go down. You're right.
It's yeah. I agree that there are core shared characteristics, you know, that are ethical and spiritual. Although I also think that there are some key differences, and all, and that they were all of the religions, I think, had their flaws, even at their greatest. At their inception. I mean, that, for example, the monotheistic religions don't have any role really for women. God is, you know, said to be a man, and then he hands down religious authority to all the male prophets, whether it's Moses or Muhammad. So, you know, I think that men made a world, a religious world, after their own image. You know, we say that God made man after his image. Well, no, it's more like, quote, man made God after, quote, his image. So, But I otherwise agree with you that, you know, there are some shared insights and wisdom that we can learn from it.
And even in the monastic religions, you know, as we dug up the Dead Sea Scrolls and the Gnostic Gospels, you know, it talks in there about Mary Magdalene as being Jesus, one of Jesus' most important disciples, right? So the divine feminine was cut off, you know, at some point, probably in the Council of Nicaea. That when they were gathering the Bible together, they made it in the image of man. Yeah, not of woman. Yeah. So it, you're right. It cut us off. So that being said, how do we get people to switch their thinking around what they're putting in their bodies?
That was my, and that was my question. You know, this whole concept is very is a lofty and a true one, but it's pretty complicated, and it seems pretty impenetrable to someone who is, you know, a stalwart, you know, omnivore. So, what's the first step in your mind? Where should one explore to kind of begin the opening of the mind, so to speak?
Well, other than reading my book. For selfish reasons, I'm going to say that. Other than that, look, I mean, we live in a consumer capitalist society that tells us that the most important thing is looking out for number one, right? So we need to organize our lives to better, you know, the private ego. And certainly what Ian and others in a lot of different arenas of life and activism are saying is, no, that's actually not the best way to live your life, folks. The best way to live your life is caring and compassion for others as well as yourself. Those things go together. Aristotle argued that in his Nicomachean Ethics, that I can only flourish if the people I love flourish. And the people I love has to include my society and my planet. The whole earth is dying. All the animals on the earth are dying, mammals, reptiles, amphibians, birds, you know, crustaceans, insects, they're all dying because of this pathological system that we've developed, these two intertwined systems of capitalism and human supremacism, which, as I described them in my book, constitute a double helix encoding the end of terrestrial life. It's like a strand of DNA, and that's it. And it may seem alarmist, but that I think is what's happening. And so it seems daunting, you know, to go with your point, James, that it seems complicated, and it is. I mean, these structures are vast. But look, the elemental issue is not complicated. It's wrong to hurt others. It's wrong to impose violence and suffering on others. So simple, so simple. So what we're doing to the other animals is simply unacceptable. It's not a complicated thing at all. And so what people need to do is, as you were saying, Kent, they need to educate themselves. They need to learn about what's really going on. I can recommend a 10-minute film by Peter called Meet Your Meat, M-E-E-T, your M-E-A-T, Meet Your Meat. I show that in my classrooms. It gives you a tiny window, a little flavor of what's happening to the billions of animals that we're...
Yeah. That's good advice. Let me put your book back up on the screen right now. And for those of you that are watching this show, we hope that you'll go and get Dr. John's book. And I've been having a little technical issue with the platform today, so I see that this is still going on. All right, here we go. So it's the omnivore's deception. Omnivore's deception. And it's an important piece of work. Highly recommend that you go to Amazon and pick up this book. It's going to change your life. It's going to change your family's life. It's going to give you some new insight on what you can do proactively to, again, become part of the solution instead of part of the problem here on the planet. So, Dr. John, I want to thank you so much for being here. We're out of time. Man, that flew by. I think this is such an important talk, and I'd like to have you back on. I'd like us to talk about this a lot more. This is an important subject.
Well, thank you so much for having me, and I'd be delighted to come again. In fact, the issues are really gets into the depths of human psychology and the way we've organized society and economy. So there's a lot to talk about.
Yeah. Well, I'd like to take a deep dive into human psychology and, where we've been programmed, where we've been lied to, where the deception has really started, and how that sits in our psyche and how we can break those chains. So I think that'd be an amazing discussion that we could have.
Well, thank you both. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. James Lee, for being my co-host today, too. And all of you, I'd like to thank you for coming on today and listening to this show. This show is a important show that can really help change lives. So we hope that you'll go out and spread the word, let people know about this show. And what else? Go out and heal it. Heal it. You can heal your life if you set your intention to do that.